We're going to have, here you go. This is so you can record any questions or comments you want to reply to.
Sounds good.
The format announced earlier was that we're going to have a time now, about 30 minutes, when you can say what you have to say. But of course, there has to be the customary commercial first. But even before that, simply a minute to say that here in New York, as was mentioned earlier, we're trying to go out to National Guard and Reserve units. And some members of Veterans for Peace, Military Project, and other people have been doing this since January. I can say these are some of the finest and most honorable people I've ever met. When we started it, we had no idea how it would go. And within 3 to 4 months of going out at 6:30 in the morning or 7 in the evening, people came to know us. What have you got for us this time? And it became more open, you know, fuck Bush, fuck the war. They don't like the war, and we're talking about National Guard troops who have been to Iraq, overwhelmingly. One said to me on one occasion, I think maybe the third or fourth time I was out there, you know, you people are against the war. Duh. I said, yeah. He said, we didn't think you cared about us. Meaning, we didn't think the anti-war movement cared about us. Because there is that much effort to reach out to the troops. Now, the pitch for money. We have spent about $1,560, give or take, to put this meeting on. That includes the airfare and train fare to get the speakers here, the rent of this hall, and a bunch of other stuff. Military Project people were all non-supervisory employees, I think it's called, otherwise known as working class people. And we came up with the money to pay for this by putting it on the credit card and taking next month's rent money to do it. So we're going to respectfully request some help from you, and they're going to pass around the traditional bucket. You have a right, of course, to know what the expenses of a meeting are anytime you come to one and are asked for money. So that's what the expenses of this one are, about $1,500 to $1,600, and we ain't got it, so we'd be very, very grateful to you to help with that. And some people are going to pass around boxes or buckets. It would be nice to pay our rent in December. And we happily take checks made out to the Military Project. Absolutely delighted, just the Military Project. And second, please, nobody feel embarrassed because you're putting in a quarter or 50 cents. There are a lot of people in New York City who do not have good jobs. There's a lot of people in New York City who don't have any jobs at all. And a quarter or 50 cents is just as important to us as a $20 bill. And we thank everyone from the bottom of our hearts for anything that you can spare to keep this work going. We got a request to do this meeting up in Connecticut. There's a group up in Hartford, some union members and some veterans want us to come up there. But before we can do that, we got to pay this one off. Also want to thank David McReynolds, who's here somewhere in the audience. He really helped us get this thing promoted. I met David back in Indiana in the 1960s. He's been fighting imperial wars now for 50 years and done a magnificent job of it. Thank you, David McReynolds, wherever you may be. He was right down here in front. Okay, while that's going on, we're going to open the floor to you. And for that, where's the floor mic? Ah, there's the man with the floor mic. Now, here's how it works. Anybody who wants to can have 3 minutes to say whatever you please. Second rule, nobody is so important they get to speak twice before anybody who wants to has had a chance to speak once. Third rule, active duty, armed forces, National Guard, reserves, military families get the first shot, if that seems reasonable to you. And if in the course of the discussion period, somebody in those categories comes up, just give me this sign, I'll give it back to you, and you come to the front of the line. And that's pretty much it. Now, the speakers here are going to write down questions you may ask, comments you may make, and then when the discussion period of about 25 minutes is over, they're going to come back for a summary period to say whatever they wish to say about whatever questions or comments you made. And I won't, because this is their meeting. So, they'll come back at the end. Okay, anybody got anything to say here? Don't be shy, ask any questions you have, or say something. You can make a comment, express an opinion. Yes, sir.
I want to thank each of you for your sacrifice and thank you for being here. My question is this. I do a lot of work with the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I have a question regarding neo-Nazism and skinheads in the military today. In your contact, have you had any contact? What is the picture from your point of view? Thank you.
Okay, now they will come back at the end of the discussion period and respond. And there's David McReynolds now. We just thanked you for your help for this meeting, David. Next, anyone, comment, opinion, disagreement? You got the floor here.
Is that good? I'm Nancy Goldner, I'm a psychotherapist. And I was noticing when you spoke about betrayal, that the contract was broken, that immediately sort of hit me right in the gut. And that's where it hits all of us, that kind of emotional injury. And I want to say that in my experience, the action people can take that empowers them can be healing. And I want to thank you for giving soldiers in the field and here a chance to heal that way. Thank you.
Next, please.
Hi, I'm a military family. My name is Tahira von Alford. I have a question regarding my young cousin. He had his foot blown off and his eye lost, and he's still having trouble giving up the Army. He's having trouble giving up the Marines. My brother was in the Army. Do you have anything to say to make a soldier feel a little better about giving up the Marines and not going to Iran? He's worried about leaving his boys behind. He's just 21.
Next, please.
The inequity of military service has been raised by a number of people, including Cindy Sheehan. One of the Bush twins apparently lives in this neighborhood, and my question is, has anyone thought about targeting them for demonstrations and protests?
Okay. Now, please remember, this is not a classroom or a management meeting, so you don't just have to have questions. You have the right to your opinions, your point of view, and to say what you think and what you believe.
I would like to say that it must take a lot of courage for you guys to do this. Thank you for doing it. Most people just go with the flow, especially in the military. My brother was a Vietnam vet. He passed away of AIDS. My father was a World War II vet. Lucky they came back with their body parts. And my brother told me firsthand about the drugs being put in the bodies and being shipped back in the body bags during Vietnam. and how he drew the maps and the horrible things he saw, and how he really cared about the Vietnamese people. And he didn't see them as the enemy, like you are saying. But he was saying how there were so many gung-ho people because they want to go up the ranks. And I know the generals were saying they need more people in Iraq. All the generals are saying this. And I told people the Democrats are not going to stop the war, and that I really should look at the Constitution and say it was written by people, owned human beings, that killed the Native people. I don't think that's a document to look up to. I understand, you know, your viewpoint about that because you're in the military, but I think a higher view is human rights that goes way above the Constitution, because the Constitution, to me, does not honor black people. It stole land from the Native people and used manifest destiny to justify it. I don't think it's a document to really look up to as a really achievement of human dignity or of human rights. I would more look up to anarchism, communism, socialism, Native traditions that have been squashed, and look and try and get the people in the military to understand that a lot of the military, they deprogram you and they build you back up to get your mind to say, this is your new family, the military, and to say, no, your family first is a human family, and saving this planet from dictators that the CIA puts all over the world. And I'll just end with this. I went to the Veterans Parade. This is just my opinion. And my brother was a vet, and I have an activist who was a vet. And they said they had an agreement with the other veterans that they didn't want us holding signs. Now, I understand that what they said, so therefore I left and I said, well, I'll protest my own way. And I just saw it as really like there was an opportunity there to say to the other vets, and Bloomberg was right there and a lot of higher ups to say, you know what, F the rules, if people support us.
Yeah, it's 3 minutes. Could you wrap up, please?
Okay, I'll wrap up with this. The bottom line was they asked us to leave and go somewhere else because they made an agreement not to hold signs. Let's urge next year, if people that support the vet to say, if you want to hold up a sign, hold
sir,
it
could
up.
You wrap up, please?
I'm leaving with this. And please read
sir,
this
sir, could
thing.
You wrap up, please?
We have I am. Please
that's
read
3 minutes, sir.
Okay. Thanks. Just please read this.
Okay. Anyone else have an opinion or point of view that you'd like to express, agree or disagree? Feel free to disagree and make criticisms, too.
My
yes,
name
sir.
Is William Fisher. I'm from Rochester, New York, member of Military Family Speak Out. My oldest son served 9 months in Iraq in 2004. I don't have a question. I just have a thank you for speaking up, being here tonight. Thank you very much.
Oh, thanks. Okay. My name is Rick Ford. I'm a member of Military Family Speak Out. My son-in-law was in Iraq for a year, got back in March of 05. My daughter was in the Army but didn't go to Iraq. They're both on IRR status till August 2007. I wanted to just throw out two things real quickly and expand a little bit on the previous speaker. The Constitution was written primarily to protect property, not to protect the rights of those who labor. So I would say the contract was broken over 200 years ago. That I think that relates to this question of democracy. I don't think that a class society where basically a small group of bankers and businessmen dictate foreign policy and economic policy can ever serve the interests of the working class. And so I think that fighting to quote unquote, or fighting as a patriotic American, quote unquote, to restore democracy is a losing battle. There is no such thing as democracy for those who labor. There's democracy for those who have the money to control this system, capitalism. That's the second. The second point is that who fights these wars primarily? Not just on quote unquote our side, but on the other side, quote unquote, workers and people who don't have very much money. That's who's forced to enlist through the economic draft, and that's who's forced to carry out these orders, and unless they do what you guys have done, which, by the way, is extremely commendable, and I want to just say you've got a lot of courage and a lot of heart, and I'm very, very happy to see you up here. I meant to say that at the beginning, but the point is that we've got to organize on class lines, and we've got to organize to get rid of a system that is responsible for these kinds of wars. When I was born in 1950,
could you wrap up?
I'm going to finish up. When I was born in 1950, the Korean War was going on. When I was a teenager, there was Vietnam. When I was 30 years old, there was Panama, and now there's Iraq. This is a systemic problem. That's what we've got to deal with. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi, I'm John Catalanato. During the Vietnam War, I organized with the American Servicemen's Union, and now I'm an editor of Workers' World newspaper, and I bring it up because I interviewed Jonathan Hutto this week. He's one of the organizers of the appeal, the petition, and I want to ask you the same question. One of the questions I asked him, which was, how do you feel the recent election will impact, in the United States, will impact on the consciousness of the troops in Iraq, and you know what impact it will have on the anti-war struggle in general. Not that I expect anything from the new leaders in the Congress, but the election itself did have an impact in that it showed that Bush was in the minority, and that's what I want to ask you. And just as far as my opinion, I say I think that the work you guys did was really good in the military. And it's also good, the people who are doing the resisting and the ones who leave for Canada. And you don't know where exactly you're going to find the crack in the wall over there. And all this kind of work is good, and we should support all of it and see which one leads to the crack and how we can push into it. Thank you.
I have a quick announcement to make. We're halfway there, and we're going to have to do it again. We raised $603.80, but that leaves various individuals still in the hole about $800. So we're going to make a second round. Thank you. Now, you were promised a half an hour of discussion, which leaves us time for three or four more people at 3 minutes each. On the one hand, I don't want to close the discussion down if people wish to continue it. On the other hand, it's a horror of New York meetings when they go on and on and on and people start walking out the door and we still have summaries from our speakers. So let me be guided by you. Do you think it reasonable that I now have three or four more speakers and then return to the speakers here? Okay. I mean, if everyone is riveted and you want to debate another hour, no problem, but if people would prefer to go to the summary here fairly soon, we can do that. Someone's got a hand up here. Yes. All right, there's a line of five people. Is that correct, Fabi? No, there's many more than five people. And the line is getting longer.
No, it's fine.
five.
There's five? Okay. What do you think about asking your sufferance for these five people, but asking them to maybe keep it a little bit under 3 minutes? Would that seem reasonable to you? Okay. All right, we'll have these five people here and ask you, please, to make the points sharp and hard and telling. Who are the five? Please see the... No. Something has just happened here. Who? Serviceman?
Yes.
He goes to the front.
Yeah, after I have what to say, people aren't going to be clapping for me anymore.
Well, can't hear you. Please.
I said after I have what say what I have to say, I don't think people are going to be clapping for me anymore. They probably want me to leave. But I want to thank you, gentlemen, for doing what you did. I did the same thing. Fortunately, I didn't go to Iraq. I went to Afghanistan, spent a year over there. My grenadier, he was killed in an IED along with another man in my squad. I was an E5 for 4 years out of my 8 years. The NCO that I was, if I had found out that any of you gentlemen were involved in the things that you've done, I probably would have tried to bring you up on UCMJ for treason. That's just the way I am as an NCO, and I just want to thank you for being here, because a lot of our forefathers, way back 225 years ago, how long has it been? You guys were in the Army, you know. A lot of them probably were saw by England as treasonous men, so you guys are doing a good thing. Don't think that you're not, but... I just want you to remember when you swore the oath to the military service, you swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me. Soldiers, while I was a soldier, I've been out for a year now, I was not a human being. I wasn't anything, just a heart with blood and pumping. I was a soldier. I did not have rights like these people here, like you do now. I was a soldier, and what I did was follow orders. It's a tough way to live. I did it for 8 years. My grenadier died. Some other bad things happened. Saw some things, didn't like them, got out. Here I am today. But I want to thank you very much for your time. Soldiers follow orders. It's what we do.
The brother could... The brother who just spoke could have mentioned that the death rate for U.S. troops in Afghanistan is higher than the death rate for U.S. troops in Iraq. There are fewer troops, but more of the fewer troops are killed than is taking place in Iraq. It is a shame that that has almost become the forgotten war. Please.
I'll keep it brief. First of all, I want to say that you guys, I really admire you for what you've been doing, and I hope more GIs start doing this, and you'll have a chain reaction where finally you will get to the point where the military people will only follow the orders that are conscientious and that are not like what we're having in Iraq today. And second of all, I have a small request, because I don't know how I'm going to get to you guys after the meeting. So I'm a writer for a local free speech newspaper, and I would be honored to interview one of you guys and to, you know, write, because I'm writing a story right now on campus recruiters, you know, military recruiters on college campuses, and I would be absolutely honored to have one of you speak to me about that so I could write about it, and so we could spread the news, spread the information throughout the public and get more people aware of this situation. I'll be back there.
Thank you for keeping it short. That's number 2 of 6, because we added a combat veteran to the front of the line. This is number 3 of 6.
Hi, I also want to thank you very much. You're an inspiration to us all. I was really struck by what one of you said about how when you started organizing, there was no Sir, No Sir hadn't come out, Iraq Veterans Against the War hadn't formed yet. You didn't have the sort of bubbling up of GI resistance that you do now, and how much courage it took for you to speak out. And I just wanted to talk about building the anti-war movement in this country and using that to support people who want to speak out and to give a sense that there are people who are against this war and how that can give courage. Because I really feel like We're on a collision course in this country between the majority of people who want to see the troops brought home, who want an end to this war, who see that that's what they voted for last week, and the people in the armed forces who want to see the troops come home, and what the people who are running this country are all about. Because I'm watching the debate unfold about Iraq, and it seems like the only thing the generals and the policymakers can agree on is the idea that we can't bring the troops home now. And I think the thing that we can agree on is that we need to bring the troops home now. I mean, I just read they're talking about sending 20,000 more troops to Iraq. That's their solution to the crisis that's going on, and yet they say it would take 500,000 troops to even begin to do what the U.S. is trying to do in Iraq, which is win an unwinnable war. And I feel like we need to begin to reorganize an anti-war movement that begins to call for troops out now, that says regardless of their plans, they all have plans for victory, and what we need to talk about is a plan to defeat the people who are running this war and actually talk about our priorities. And I think you guys have done an amazing service in advancing that, but I think that the anti-war movement in this country has to begin to live up to what you've done and to the people who are fighting and resisting. I know there's a demonstration on January 27th in Washington, D.C. against the war. I hope everyone will be there. And I think we have to go to that demonstration and say that we cannot wait any longer. There cannot be one more life lost in Iraq. It's time to bring the troops home now. This is an immoral, wrong war. It cannot be won. It can only be ended.
Thank you. I assume that there are people passing around the hat for that missing $800. It's my rent we're talking about here, as well as other people's rent and finances. Okay, this is speaker 4 of 6. Thank you, sir.
I thought it was 7 of 9. Thank you. My name is Mitchell Cohn. I'm a member of the Brooklyn Greens and the Green Party here in New York, which has been opposing the war from the start and supporting resistors in the military in many different ways. What I wanted to ask you about ecological impacts and health impacts of various things. One is that soldiers are among a group of people, U.S. soldiers, that are always experimented on before it comes to the general population. Soldiers, prisons, American Indian populations. So I wanted to ask you about what type of vaccines you've been getting, anti-anthrax stuff or anti-nerve gas stuff, what exactly were you inoculated with, and what happened to people who didn't take them voluntarily, also the effects of depleted uranium on both U.S. soldiers as well as on the surrounding environment and the water, drinking water in Iraq. Also, the U.S. military is the largest purchaser of genetically engineered experimental food in the United States. What you guys have been eating has never been tested before anywhere in the world, and it's being tested on you, and congratulations. And those sort of questions, if you could get into some of the deforestation, where there was forest in Iraq, the destruction of the water supply and so forth, if you could address those, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Number 5 of 6, please.
Yeah, mine's going to be quick. My name's Peg Rapp, and we pick at the recruiting station every week, and also our local high school with the ROTC program. But one of the young women already addressed a lot of what I wanted to ask. On the election, I've been listening to these subcommittee hearings, and they're all talking about putting in more troops to pacify Baghdad till they can get out. And I want to know what you think the effect would be, both on you know, the men and women in the service right now, how they would see that, what reaction there would be, how that's going to, you know, if that's even going to, you think that's realistically going to happen? Scares me, but, you know, anyway, that's it.
Thank you, ma'am. Last comment from the floor, please.
Hi, I'm with Queens Anti-War Committee, and we're trying our damnedest to organize an anti-war movement in a really tough situation, and I'd really like to know how you think we could build relations with you guys. I mean, I probably sound silly, but I have no clue. So, thank you.
Thank you. Before I return the chair to Michael Letwin, who will chair the summaries, someone asked if we would identify the unit. It was the 1st Infantry Division where these three men served during their period in Iraq. And second, that one comment. All I ever did was sit in front of a computer at a desk and produce a newsletter. There are many people in the military project who did work as well. But these and other men and women like them inside the armed forces, resisting, trying to do what they can to build enough underground until there can be what they describe as unified action, are the people, I think, who have so much honor and so much courage that I felt embarrassed to hear my name mentioned, frankly. And the other thought I had, I can't resist just one personal comment tonight, you know, if 100,000 members of the United States Army and the Marine Corps at some point in the future decide that it is necessary to march arms in hand on Washington, D.C. to take this country back in the name of the Constitution, that's fine with me.
I thought those comments were very, all the comments that were made here tonight were very interesting, and thank you for sharing them. Let me just say very quickly, by the way, before I forget, that I was asked to announce that there's a film called The Ground Truth about soldiers in the war, which is being shown Tuesday night, November 28th, 7 p.m. at Purchase College in the Red Room Student Services Building in Purchase, New York. So we've come to the point now where we're going to ask our brothers who are here with us to summarize, and I believe we're going to take about 20 minutes to do this, but of course we'll go for as long as you would like to, so take it away.
All right. I'd like to just real quick get into this for some of the people out there that asked the questions about the Constitution and in reference to it. I'll speak for myself, but I know these other two here were fully aware of the history of the Constitution. One of the things we read extensively was accurate history of the United States, not the gentrified version of it. I'm still convinced that what it says in the Constitution is probably the closest thing we can get to an honest government if you choose to have a government over you. That being said, I don't trust authority, I have a problem with it, and I work against it best I can without getting jailed or arrested. And even then, I've been jailed and arrested since I've been out in the last 18 months. But at that rate, I really do believe that when we swear to uphold the Constitution, soldiers aren't upholding the Constitution for the upper class. We're not protecting the Constitution for the gentry. We're protecting it for the citizens of America, the constitutional rights of them, because that document does guarantee our dignity as adult human beings. So that's what I was proud to wish to serve for. I don't feel that I protected it in any which way or another, but I definitely feel like the Constitution is something worth fighting for. It's the only thing that guarantees us any kind of power in this system. As far as, I don't know, I guess you got anything?
To follow up on that, I think that there's a potential that was in the Constitution and with the country of America that we've never lived up to. Despite our history and the intentions that were behind the documents, they do have potential, and we continue to fail to live up to that. I want to kick it back real quick to Thomas Barton, who's extremely modest, but the amount of work that he does for the GI Special and Traveling Soldier is phenomenal. When I first got out of the military, Thomas invited me to New York, and I crashed in his pad. And it was the first time I've ever been to New York City, so you know, I got almost 5 hours of sleep a night. You know, out all the time. You know, slept in. But every time when I crawled into his apartment, he was still awake at his computer working on the GI Special. And every time when I woke up in the morning, he was already gone because he works in a hospital here in the city. And, you know, it's pretty much what he's doing when he's not at work is working on the GI Special. And he's dedicated to it, and he's dedicated to us. And, you know, I appreciate him and all the work that he's done that went into this, and all the work that everybody has done to make this event happen and have this become a reality.
Thank you. As far as I know, one of the questions was this thing about 20,000 plus troops being sent to Iraq and Afghanistan, primarily Iraq. I looked into this a little bit today, and I best I could come up with is that it's the Iraq strategy team headed by James Baker. And to me, I'm very, very cynical of our government right now, and I see something like that, and I call it out as bullshit. That's the best I can come up with on their 4 points to victory in Iraq is 20,000 new troops to Iraq to help secure Baghdad. I do remember Colin Powell at one time saying that we needed at least 500,000 troops to quell an insurgency in Iraq, so I think that they know that that's doomed for failure. Bringing together coalition forces of local countries, including Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and I guess, hypothetically speaking, even Syria and Iran, and I think that's just outrageous, those countries. We refuse to talk to two of those countries, and they refuse to talk to us. I don't see how any headway is going to be made there. That's doomed for failure. Uniting three warring factions in Iraq is number three, and that's the Sunni, Shiites, and Kurds, which is a disastrous civil war. When we left Iraq, we saw a civil war taking place on our way out the door, and we knew it then. We were calling, openly discussing, this place is turning into a civil war. We can't trust the Sunnis, we can't trust the Shiites, they don't trust us, they don't trust each other. All it was a big three-ring circus, and we've done nothing to try to diplomatically resolve that, and now it's getting out of our hands. It's something we can't understand as Westerners or Americans. There's a deeply imbued hatred between the two factions. I think could be talked out, but we're not making any progress of making that happen. So I think uniting three warring factions in Iraq is just outrageous without a plan. And allocating more money is number four, more tax dollars from Congress to go into a war effort that's already been a financial black hole. And this all comes back to a point I was going to make for the sergeant. I don't know if he's still here, but we're glad you made it back. And yeah, we don't have the same opinions on things, but we both fought over there, and we all fought here with the same cause that you were there for, and so we can understand, we're grateful that you came home. The only thing I can implore to you is to educate yourself, and when this administration comes up with another far-fetched scheme of saying, here's our victory plan in Iraq, I call bullshit. There's nothing on that plan that says it makes any sense or is even possible, so the only thing I can say is, like, everybody in this room, I'm probably preaching the choir right now, but for people out there that, you know, don't understand it or are still bought in by the hype, I definitely say educate yourself. Look at what's going on. Pick this thing apart for what it's worth, because everything that they're telling us is hype, and they're trying to convince us that it's going to work. And I think all four of their points, all will result to is more money and more financial gain for the military-industrial complex. And the soldiers are just fodder in the mix, and that's what we're fighting for, is to stop that shit from happening as soon as we can.
The very first question we got was about neo-Nazis and skinheads, hate groups within inside the military. I know that recently, within the past 3 months, the military has listed the regulations saying that you can't enlist known hate group members. That no longer applies. I know that that's happened. Although we didn't see any actual, you know, like, Nazi flavor activity from within the ranks. I mean, racism is one of the most prevalent things that exists in the military today. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's racism or sexism or homophobia. The military is a very self-divisive society that is riddled with hatred and aggression. And although we didn't see it, I'm fairly sure it would exist. And I would like to point out the Nazis that are currently running the military as well.
I'm going to go back to the number of troops question and sending them there. You know, that while we were fighting in Iraq, the one thing that was pretty plainly clear is that the insurgency was primarily motivated by the occupation itself. So So basically, if, let's say, New York City was occupied by a foreign force, I bet a lot of us would pick up arms and fight against him. If they sent 1,000 troops here, we would fight against him. If they sent 10,000 troops, would we fight less hard? No. You know, it's not about the amount of soldiers. In Vietnam in 1968, there was 400,000 soldiers in Vietnam, a country smaller in geographic in population that was less divided by religion, you know, and there's still, you know, there's still intense violence there. And, you know, I've heard Rupert Murdoch compare, you know, this war and previous wars, saying that the sacrifice has been small. But if you look at Vietnam, the first 4 years of Vietnam, there's less than 2,000 dead and around 7,000 wounded. In this war, we're not even at 4 years, and there's almost 3,000 dead and 20,000 wounded. If this escalates on the same rate as Vietnam, you know, what's a 1968 scenario of this war going to look like for our American soldiers? So I think we have to look at that pretty long and hard when we look at how many troops we're going to be sent into Iraq and what they could legitimately do there.
That's not to say what happens when they come home. There's a lot of issues that go behind that too. Someone out there, can't remember who it was, they brought up the recent elections. Again, I'll say that I'm very cynical. This two-party system, it's really a one-party system, pretending to be a two-party system. And I think we all know that. I will admit it felt good seeing Rumsfeld getting pushed out the door. I'm tired of all the speaking points and arguing points and the media circus that goes on all the time, and I want to start seeing this administration held accountable for every last crime they've done. And again, that sergeant said that we were guilty of treason. I would like to point out that it is a constitutional crime to, as a president, mislead a country in a war on false pretensions and false evidence, and that to me is a higher treason. I don't think you can expect anything from the Democrats, basically.
We talked about who fights. I want you to be aware that 60% of the Iraqi population is under the age of 24. Since the wars with Iran and you know, America 91, you know, we severely depleted, you know, the average fighting age of the adult male in Iraq, and the survival rate, you know, the lifespan of the Iraqi is not so good because of the environmental hazards and various things like that. So who fights over there? Well, a lot of times it's kids. And who fights here? I want you to be aware that the 18-year-old kids that are coming out of high school and joining the military today were 13 years old when the 9/11 tragedy hit. They watched that on TV when they were 13 years old. And is this their war? Should they be fighting it? I don't know. I think that's a legitimate question that we should be asking.
And to follow up on that, the people who fight wars, starving people don't start wars. Impoverished people don't start wars. The top 1% of the population starts wars, the well-fed and the greedy, those who are unconcerned. And at any point when you let 1% of your population control what's going on, you've done something wrong. I mean, look at the original 1%ers, the Hell's Angels, you know? What if they were in charge? You know? probably similar results, huh?
When we talked about, there was a couple guys who talked about socialism or anarchists and you know, I think those ideas, they're a little bit more highly evolved than a lot of soldiers think. At Iraq Veterans Against the War, you know, we try to make a very, very safe place for a gateway to soldiers who want to begin to become activists and start to resist to come to. We keep three major goals, basically, you know, out of Iraq now, you know, help the veterans when they come home, and help reparations and rebuild Iraq, their country and culture. And through that, we've seen a lot of guys come in, and once they start to realize that there's more to war than just going to war, Then they start asking the questions of what's wrong with our culture, what's wrong with our society, what's wrong with our government, what's wrong with our economics that is generating war. And they go on into other organizations that have a deeper understanding and affect those kinds of things. So we are aware of you know, that higher evolution of thought, but at least with IVAW, we want to really concentrate on specific things that soldiers can understand basically when they come out and want to get active.
That's a lot to lay on a soldier who just got out of the Army and has been indoctrinated for upwards of 3 or 4 years. I mean, a lot of the stuff we were reading while we were in our platoon or in our tents or in our Humvees, hell, I'm not going to lie, I was reading Emma Goldman. I was reading, you know, Peter Kropotkin. We're familiar with that train of thought, but you can't lay that on an Iraq veteran. And to affect change at a local level, you're not going to convince a lot of people. It's just a lot to lay on an Iraq veteran who's already dealing with issues of the war back in his mind and his memories. And a lot of soldiers, they honestly feel betrayed, and they don't know how to address that, and they don't know how to feel about it. It's like an abused housewife. I hate to say it, but they keep going back for more. Uncle Sam hits them with the backhand, they beg for the fist. And soldiers have a hard time coming to terms with it. You know, they were manipulated and they were used, especially if they're surrounded by what they consider liberal propaganda. So it's just important to build that, what the IVAW is doing right now, to build that movement to kind of accept them into a comfortable realm first. And I think that addresses some of the questions that were asked earlier. So,
I want to hit up the drugs we took.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
The ecological and human health effects, as far as the...
depleted uranium, larium, the anthrax vaccine, the list goes on and on. Like, I used to downhill skateboard professionally. Now I can't maintain my balance because larium's shot it out. I don't know what the anthrax has done to me. I know I've got a big fat ulcer. I don't know where that came from. I don't know what the DU did to me. I spent an extra month on the end of my year tour in Kuwait cleaning the DU dust off the vehicles. I mean, I don't know what it's done to me, and no one gets tested. No one gets tested when they return. Two states have tried to pass legislation for the returning National Guard soldiers for testing for depleted uranium, and I believe only one. Yep. That's exactly the point. You can try. We have to build awareness, and off awareness we have to educate. And once we educate people, we can activate them, you know, and help them to, you know, make more people aware and educate more people. And unless we take these initial steps ourselves, you know, we're just going to keep using depleted uranium over there. The radiation levels in Baghdad right now are 3,000 times normal. Like, when parents have kids, they don't ask if it's a boy or a girl, they ask if it's normal. You know? And we've got soldiers returning right now having kids with one eye in flippers. And people are like, oh, no, it's not DU, it's something else. And how long did they deny Agent Orange? When did they acknowledge Agent Orange? 88?
Mid-80s? I mean, so, at what point was napalm considered inhumane, you know? If it wasn't for activist groups, none of this would ever got solved. And DU is a serious issue, and you can't say depleted uranium or DU on the street and expect that person to know what you're talking about. I mean, maybe sometimes, but I honestly haven't encountered too many people that know what it is. It's just a matter of getting the word out and education. And as far as what the Army, I think the question was, what is the effects of the Army's presence in a country and the effects of DU that they leave behind, or the GMOs they're testing on us. Of course, we knew the food wasn't good for us, but I mean, for a fact, I know that KBR was feeding us some of the most fattening fried foods imaginable, and it was disgusting. And I think they were charging like $30 a plate for it too.
It's not $30 per meal, it's $30 a plate. Like, if you take a plate and you put it on top of your plate so you can walk back to your room and eat it, that's $70.
War profiteering was going on rampantly, and 18 months ago we were considered crazy, lunatics, conspiracy nutcases, and then in the last 6 months, I'd say people have, it's become a CNN issue, for Christ's sake. I never thought I would have seen, like, CNN's broken government. I was shocked. I thought I'd stepped into the Twilight Zone, but these things are starting to become major issues, and that's good. It means we're going in the right direction. The education needs to get out, the awareness needs to get out more, but at least it's going in the right direction, so we're hopeful for that.
The woman who asked about giving up the Army or Marines camaraderie, that's probably one of the most difficult questions, because what you find out at the end of the day is that you are fighting for the friends on your left and right of you. And there's a bond that you make when you survive such misery and you shared such hardship with a small group of people, that they'll be the only ones that ever understand your own personal agony, what you went through. And those will be the only people that really understand you fully. And it's hard to break and sever those ties. And even now, I think what holds Iraq Veterans Against the War together is not only just the cause, but it's also the camaraderie that we're building again. It's that family that we missed that becomes us. Before we went to Iraq, when I was talking about we were talking about the possibilities of stop loss being lifted and us allowing to go home when we were supposed to in the middle of our tours. And one of my friends who was also a sniper basically signed a contract saying that he would extend, even if the stop loss was lifted, he would extend to finish the entire tour. So he basically felt a loyalty to his buddies. And I gave him a burning bridge kind of, or a burning building analogy. I said, you know, if there's a burning building and a huge beam falls on you and I'm there and you can't lift it and I can't help you lift it, would you rather me stand in the burning building and die with you, or escape to safety so you could die with the peace that knowing your friends lived? And you know, it's not on the individual responsibility. The Iraq is a dangerous place and the weapons there are indiscriminate. IEDs, you know, vehicle car bombs, suicide bombs, mortars, RPGs, you know, they will kill you, you know, and it's completely random who they kill. They don't care about the color of skin, your rank, you know, how fast you run, how well you shoot, how many push-ups you can do, how much you've trained, you know, you die, you know. No matter if you pray every day, you know, it kills you. And there's nothing that an individual can do most of the time to save his buddies, because it's either him or them, or, you know, everybody or nobody. So it's a difficult thing to break, and, you know, you have to admire guys that want to go back into it because of that loyalty. But the fraternity of the military is preached upon you so heavily that you feel that bond is committed. And, you know, always faithful isn't always true, because once you get out of the military, you quickly find out that the veteran administration's not there, and, you know, those institutions that you join will turn their back because they're trying to save a buck and not your life.
Last comment. We're just about to wrap it up. If you guys would like to just add anything else, this is a good time, and then we'll make it more informal.
I would just like to say that we're not special. We're not. None of us are college educated. I still haven't gone to college. High school diploma was about the most of it. We didn't reach these conclusions, you know, from watching mainstream news or anything. We spent a lot of hours, instead of playing PlayStation, we were reading a book. Instead of drinking at a kegger in the army barracks, we were, you know, in our rooms watching DVDs. We were seriously angry, and we were seriously wanting to change it. And I can only implore everybody here to educate yourself on these issues. The answers are out there. You just got to find the right materials to get about it. And I'm sure if you looked at this thing in the right light, this whole war, and, like, again, I'm probably preaching to the crowd, but if you could spread the message, if you really look into it and educate yourself on this whole thing, it looks so corrupt and so criminal that it's outrageous. And I don't think that we're crazy anymore. I think a lot of people are agreeing with us. So thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thanks for the support. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
I'd just like to thank whoever pointed out that first and foremost, above all else, our true obligation is to our human family. And that's why I'm
sorry,
here.
Could you hold on for one second? Folks, could you keep the noise down in the back, please? It's hard to hear up here. Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I thought they were having a good time.
Please.
And no, that's it. Obligations to your human family, first and foremost. Take care of your man, your woman, your life, your people, your children, your community, your cat, your dog. It doesn't matter. Like, if we just took care of each other, none of these problems would exist. If we just fed each other. You know, we spent $600 billion in Iraq last year. We could irrigate Africa for $30 billion. So it just shows you exactly where our priorities lie. That's it. That's all I got. I'd like to thank Tom for maintaining his energy level.
For what can be done next, we are all Iraq veterans against the war, and we have a website, ivaw.org. You can go there. We have profiles that people are labeled that they're part of the Speakers Bureau. We can go to your high schools, to your colleges, to your churches, wherever you are, and help speak and help organize. So please visit our website, check it out, that's probably one of the best ways you could help get involved and help the Iraq veterans. Thanks.
And buy them drinks.
I want to thank the brothers so much. It's an honor to have you here.